And we're back.
Here we are.
Wearing our award-centric best. We're ducked out in tuxedos as our logo is right now. That's actually how we live our day-to-day lives anymore.
Happy birthday to you, Mike, number one.
God, don't do that.
I can't believe you're recording a podcast on your birthday.
Yeah, just turned 19 for the, I think, 12th time in a row.
You're a worker.
This is Mike, and Oscar. I am your host, Mike. This is my co-host also, Mike.
We are the remaining gentlemen.
That's right. As was, who said that? What line
Seth
was that?
Myers right
Seth
at the
Myers,
top.
Right. Yeah, tough Gold job Globes. By both Seth Myers and Olivia Munn, but that's what we're here to review today. We're going to give you an awards show review, right? We're going to combine the Golden Globes and the Critics' Choice and maybe hit on some stuff that's coming up, kind of give you a more finite picture of what to expect come Oscar nomination time. Once again, for those of you who don't know, the Oscar nomination is going to be announced Tuesday, January 23rd. That's coming up, a little less than 2 weeks right now.
Mm-hmm.
We're on our way. We had the Golden Globes were in this past Sunday. Critics' Choice just happened last night, which was Thursday on the 11th. So we're going to hopefully frame the picture going forward for you and let you know what you can expect come Oscar nomination time and give you a little leeway into what may be winning the awards Oscar Sunday.
It was a momentous week. I think our slogan, when reality sucks, watch movies with us, has come into play. I mean, in a way that
reality has sucked.
I mean, the Twitter feed has just been gross.
Yeah, it's terrible.
And I think that slogan, in terms of our pitch to your and our collective escapism, really makes more sense. However, like the movies, like how the movies pitch the same thing, I think, you know, we still wrestle with these moral dilemmas, these moral questions, and we're gonna talk about them through the filter of entertainment. But we're gonna get at it.
Yeah, we're definitely gonna hit on all the subjects, and that means all the subjects, the ones that are not too pleasant to talk about. But it's kind of, think of this episode as not only a show review, but also a pseudo Hollywood hot take, because it's so prevalent now. I mean, these stories are everywhere. We're gonna get to them in due time. Let's start off with expectations. What do you expect going? Anything you had thinking about the award shows in general? Any thoughts
on the award side? I would say the Hollywood press always does some wacky things.
Yes.
And the TV winners are usually things I haven't seen yet. And
all I learned from the last couple days is that I have to watch The Handmaid's Tale because I haven't yet.
And is it The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel or The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel? They said for portraying Maisel, this is The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. And I literally on the announcer at the Globes. And
honestly,
I just thought
it was a documentary about Johnny Football.
I was very confused. But yeah, the Hollywood foreign press doesn't always line up with the Oscars. We're going to have some analytics for you on that, kind of piling on what we did in our previous Hollywood hot takes where we mentioned the Golden Globe nominations and the Critics' Choice nominations. Go back and listen to that, baby.
So part of the idea of this, doing this podcast this way, I told you we had a little something different. We're going to try to incorporate some tweets we've seen around social media, some articles we've read, give you a full picture of what the media industry in general has thought of these awards or does think about going forward. Not necessarily just us giving our, you know, arguing about, well, this person should have won or that person should have won, because we want to save that for our projections, which we're going to give you at some point as it gets closer to Oscar time. But just to talk about expectations and things we've noticed after the award shows or going into the award shows. Mark Harris tweeted something, unpopular opinion, he says, which is always a form of preening, but I think in this case it might be true. The most under-rewarded movie of 2017 is Dunkirk, and you were talking last night that you kind of think you agree with that.
Yes, I love Dunkirk. It's very high on my list. I think a couple of movies have creeped up to it. In all honesty, I've raised the grades of several others. Lady Bird, Get Out, I, Tonya came out strong, and how
this
it debuted.
It's been a weird year in that the rewatchability of everything has been so high. It kind of, you know, you gains points.
Plus points. Every time I watch Get Out, I mean, I had a point. Every time I watch Lady Bird, same way with, and Dunkirk. So if I guess the movie I watch the most is probably going to end up my top choice for Oscar season. But we definitely are having a strong year in movies. I think Hollywood is somewhat hungry again. This is something I've been saving for a few podcasts. I'm really proud of the type of movies that we're able to watch and the perspectives that we're able to take part in finally. And I don't think, you know, a guy like me doesn't have the right to say that. I think, by all means, I'm learning a lot throughout this award season.
It's been awesome.
It's having me wrestle with some serious quandaries, both morally and sociologically.
That's a word.
That's almost a word.
Yeah, it's a couple parts of different words. The only thing I know for sure before we get into the recap of the issues and what happened with the award shows, Hans Zimmer is getting screwed.
Yes, he is.
Alexandra Desplat, great for you. Shape of Water, we talked about it. Was a good. We're going to have things to say about that movie in general. Hans Zimmer, how is he not getting awarded for Dunkirk?
Didn't he just take Desplat? Didn't he just take the score from Amelie?
Yes.
Jean-Pierre Jeunet movie from a while ago.
Control C.
What is the difference between those two scores? I guess I got to look back at it.
Oh, man. I cannot believe that score from Dunkirk has been overlooked. And, you know, that's what I gave my highest grade so far this whole season.
99.
I gave it 100. Yeah, 90. Yeah. Good Lord. And that's the torch I'm going to bear. Let's talk about the award shows in general. Let's talk about the hosts and the pre-shows and what happened in the beginning. We're going to try to combine the looking at them both in through the same lens. Again, the Golden Globes were this past Sunday. Critics' Choice Award were this past Thursday. Golden Globes were hosted by Seth Meyers. But before we got to the Golden Globes award show itself, we had the pre-show, which was on E.
Yes.
And Mike and I are two grown single men that were watching the pre-show for the Golden Globes, the red carpet on E. So that tells you a lot about our lives right now.
Our lives are changing, Michael.
The pre-show was dominated by people like Deborah Messing, Laura Dern, outright speaking their minds. Deborah Messing has got most of the headlines saying, "I was shocked to learn that E! Doesn't pay their female hosts as much as their male hosts." And that, you know, with the hashtag Time's Up movement and everything that was done throughout both nights, that was a big theme and got a lot of headlines there.
Yeah, I thought many of the people who spoke out picked their spots beautifully in that regard. And it got the appropriate play afterwards for days afterwards. We're still talking about Deborah Messing.
Yeah, and she's never been one to really sit on her thoughts and she's always willing to speak her mind and speak out anyway. So good for her. And it made had a positive effect and definitely caused waves throughout the entertainment industry. Catherine Deneuve of the controversial, fascinating Roman Polanski film Repulsion. She's been one of the faces against the Time's Up movement. And these people exist. They say that, you know, that some people are fake in the movement. They think that some people, that just a witch hunt against men.
You can hear us wrestling with this whole thing. Look, there's going to be some people who lie. I mean, people are people. There's gonna be some problematic situations where we're wrestling with the morals at play, where we're thrust as movie pundits into the, you know, function of a bit of a morality police. And I don't love that, because I think a lot of the critics on Twitter, a lot of the critics speaking out have been like thrust in that role. But it happened with sports media a couple years back.
Yep.
Not just with the steroids, but with the Jerry Sandusky thing, with a whole bunch of the political framing of the Colin Kaepernick situation.
If you're more of a cinephile than a sports person, Jerry Sandusky was an assistant coach at Penn State. He was found out to be
serial child molester.
Child molester, and it was a systemic wide problem.
Right.
Penn State.
And we don't want to mention him in the same sentence as Kaepernick necessarily, but Kaepernick forced us to wrestle with the proper way to protest. And
yeah, like you said, I mean, you can't, because the worlds of social media and everything entertainment are so intertwined that you can't watch something without forming opinions on serious issues.
Right.
Is that a good thing? Probably. It makes you think.
Yes, and then the movies approach these same issues, so it's appropriate and it works. And like I said, you know, escapism is to a degree. You still don't want to just take leave of your senses in all reality. And not, I mean, the best escapism, science fiction, fantasy, they're some of the more moral pieces of works of art that are out there. And we're seeing some of them recognized finally by the award seasons, with the new influence on the Academy by its new members. And that's just very refreshing. I think this whole award season has been refreshing more than it's been depressing. And that's still my take. I'm bullish on things.
That's good. It's certainly a positive outlook. And, you know, you read so much about the doom and gloom and how Hollywood's dying and the movie industry is dying. All these scandals are happening. Every leading man in Hollywood is a scumbag these days. I mean, you're right. There is a silver lining to all this.
And yeah, we're getting some of the best movies we've seen in years. And we're having one of the strongest years at the movies that we've seen in maybe two decades, looking at my old list. And we have voices that have been squelched for so long, able to make their own films and tell stories beautifully on their first try, debut movies, just crushing it and vying for Oscars and in a worthy fashion.
And so in the year where we had this big minority movement and this big women's movement, it was a white guy hosting the Golden Globes, because why not? Seth Meyers was tasked with the hosting duties. Olivia Munn, as we said, did the Critics' Choice, but Seth Meyers... what'd you think about his monologue, his opening monologue?
It was funny, and the Golden Globes made it funnier than Olivia Munn did it. Now, we didn't see the Critics' Choice opening. We kind of came in midway with that broadcast.
The tone of the two shows struck me, because the Golden Globes is always this big Hollywood party, and that's their selling point. And it was
the fun award show,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was, but it was so serious, and whereas the Critics' Choice tried to be more relaxed, but I felt like it, because of time constraints, it certainly was so rushed.
Yes.
And they decided to make sacrifices in certain places. The Golden Globes went long, but they were talking about all these serious issues. The Critics' Choice kind of poked fun at the Golden Globes sometimes, saying that, like, none of the men addressed the Time's Up movement, which was a problem.
Right.
But then they decided to not show any of the clips from their lead actress nominees, because they had to cut them for time. And, like, in the one year where you shouldn't do that, where you have to talk, like, you have to show the full clips of what these people are being nominated for, it was a weird vibe from both award shows for
me. Yeah, it's hard to be judgmental, because there's so many balls in the air, and it's just such a difficult situation. But you're right. Golden Globes were funnier, more polished. Critics' Choice, I would just say the comedy didn't work as well. However, I found things out about myself watching the Critics' Choice Awards. I haven't turned on the CW network probably for 20 years.
Oh, yeah, I was the same way. I was like, all right, we're still doing this. All right, CW.
When I was a tween and Smallville was on and Lana Lane, my God, back when I was a little kid, and I haven't turned that channel on since, so here I was watching the CW. Like, who did you know any of the red carpet interviews from the people that
No.
Who are those people? Like,
no idea.
And we cover every movie, and like, we watch them all. We see a ton of TV. We're a couple of schlubs and couch potatoes. We are aware, and I'm like, I think I recognize that person from a supporting role in like a, you know, Jason Reitman movie 5-6 years ago, but I don't think I know who they are.
Keeping that SAG card going.
They're on the CW.
So, looping back around to Seth Meyers, I know I got a little off course there. His monologue, I thought, was as good as it could have been for that situation. It's a tough situation, but he went right after, name-dropped all these people, went right after Kevin Spacey, Harvey Weinstein, Woody Allen. He didn't hold back, which
Willem
I think in
Dafoe
that...
The Willem Dafoe joke, yeah, where he, like, said every guy is squirming in their seats. Yeah. They don't want to be mentioned with it. And then Willem Dafoe made that face.
Gives that look, which is like a meme now.
Every gif where he bugs his eyes out, and... then it comes true the next day. Oh my God, yep. Prophecy. So that would have been funnier, but it's not anymore. Yep. So there's a lot of things like that where the jokes have just been stepped on by the news media and by the real life stories that are happening.
What a surprise, though. Seth Meyers, after the opening, pretty much disappeared from the show.
Yeah, there are some funny gifs on Twitter where people they're at a board meeting and the one guy walks out the window.
He just jumps out the window. It's like, I mean, Olivia Munn, say what you want about her comedy, and some of the stuff landed and most of it didn't, but like, at least she was actually a host. She appeared through many segments. She was presenting presenters and like...
how many outfits she had.
Yeah, and Seth Meyers, he was like, here's my monologue. Deuces, people.
Yeah,
I'm out.
Once every 20 minutes I'm showing up with a joke in question mark in quotes.
I guess, you know, it can go either way, because we've had our award shows with a host such as Anne Hathaway and James Franco, who we're going to talk about, don't worry. Anne Hathaway and James Franco were killed for overexposure at an award show,
right,
being too prevalent with their hosting duties. So who knows? I don't know what the balance is to work, but it was just odd to me. Again, a very weird. I don't want to make this into an I, Tonya review where we keep saying how awkward and weird it was, but just... it's a weird year for award shows in general.
Mm-hmm.
So back to the big movement of the day was the Time's Up movement, obviously. It was hit on right away by the Critics' Choice. Took a while for the same momentum to get going in the Golden Globes, which was very odd since the Globes aired first and were the catalyst for the Time's Up movement. But again, nobody at the Globes really talked about it until we got to President Oprah. President-elect Winfrey kind of opened the floodgates, and after she talked directly about the Time's Up movement during her moving speech, which was... obviously the highlight of the Golden Globes. Everybody kind of pitched in with it. Salma Hayek led the crowd in a chant of it. Reese Witherspoon said it. And then once again, we got to the Critics' Choice and everybody said it right away.
She did empower people to speak out. I mean, Natalie Portman came
Oprah
right
empowers
up.
People?
Yeah, she came right up after Oprah when she said what she said of the here are all the male nominees. I mean, that was a hell of a moment. And listen, I've been wrestling with this question, just like a lot of people in the media, in the political media. Oprah Winfrey is quite the compelling personality. Everybody agrees with that.
Yes.
She's one of the foremost business women, the foremost business people in the world. She's a media mogul after just, you know, starting her career as a successful journalist, then a actress, then a talk show host. There's probably a bunch more superlatives you can put in there. Like Seth Meyers says, what an honor for Cecil B. DeMille to give the Cecil B. DeMille award
funny.
To Oprah.
That was funny.
That was good. And I think Democrats are a little standoffish at the moment. Some of them, at least on the political podcast, that, you know, again, we're honest with our politics. We vote blue. And they're saying that they don't know if necessarily she's the right candidate. But if she is, let's vet her through the political process. Let's have her run with these other nominees out there. And let's see.
Yeah, Pod Save America, you said you were listening to it this morning. And yeah. That was kind of their take. They wanted to put her through the ringer. No pun intended.
Yeah.
to actually see if she's a worthy candidate. And if she is, and people kind of had problems with the, you know, once Oprah gave her speech, the whole movement was, oh, President Oprah, let's get right. Oprah Winfrey. People, Seth MacFarlane came out, tweeted, Oprah is beyond a doubt a magnificent orator, but the idea of reality show star running against a talk show host is troublingly dystopian. We don't want to create a world where dedicated public service careers become undesirable and impractical in the face of raw celebrity. He's since gotten some backlash to that tweet, so it's
obvious
a
pros
minefield.
And cons. I mean, on the one hand, she's probably more qualified than
and defining her as only a talk show host is rough,
right? But Reagan and Trump on the other side were actors and real estate moguls and obviously reality talk TV stars. I mean, she's probably a little more qualified than them. I don't know, but it's close. You can make that debate. So it's not like...
Yeah, it's easy to say, you know, you don't want celebrities to... She's not Donald Trump.
Right.
You know, and Donald Trump, did he accomplish a lot in the business sense? Obviously, whether
yes.
you like him or not. But you would think that as far as charity, generosity, creating movements, standing up for minorities and stuff, again, without getting into the political sphere, you would think Oprah has done more in that realm to maybe make her a better politician, but who knows?
I think it's sad that we can't trust career public servants for the highest office in the land, in the topmost office of public servants.
I think
that
everything about our political sphere right now is sad.
It's sad. I mean, and, you know, even going back to Obama, I mean, he was just a one-term senator. I mean, he had a lot to do, community organizer.
Yeah, but he was from Kenya, so.
I mean, Jesus. So we haven't had an experienced president in almost, well, even George W. was a governor and Clinton was a governor. Like, we haven't had that vice president becomes president since the 80s. And that's sad.
Leave that where it is. We'll leave that to the professionals. We just want to hear us talk about, you know, a lot less severe topics like, oh, I don't know, sexual assault.
Hank's Oprah ticket would be unstoppable. But yes, you're right. We have more work to do.
So the biggest dark cloud about this Time's Up movement, it started on Golden Globes night.
Yes.
A lot of the men wearing the Time's Up pin. A lot of backlash on social media from victims, people accusing them of being hypocrites, having done unscrupulous things related to domestic violence and violence against women in the past, sexual assault in the past against women. Unsubstantiated, maybe, maybe not. We don't know. It's tough to talk about this at all, but we're going to give it our best shot. Obviously, the big story that came out of that, one of the biggest hypocrites in the world, at least according to Twitter, was James Franco wearing a Time's Up pin. Ali Sheedy, who Franco directed on an off-Broadway play, came out, tweeted. She has since taken down the tweets, but at the time, this was on HuffPo. People magazine had it. James Franco just won. Please never ask me why I left the film TV business again. Okay, wait, bye. Christian Slater and James Franco at a table at the Golden Globes. Hashtag me too. Why is a man hosting? Why is James Franco allowed in? Said too much. Knight, love you. Hashtag Golden Globes.
She did take those tweets down.
Those have since been deleted.
Well,
and then after the Globes, of course, just to give you the full story, former students of James Franco came out and tweeted.
He runs an acting school in California there in L.A.
And they came out and Sarah Tither Kaplan, hey, James Franco, nice Time's Up pin at the Golden Globes. Remember a few weeks ago when you told me the full nudity you had me do in two of your movies for $100 a day wasn't exploitative because I signed a contract to do it. Time's up on that. Violet Paley, cute Time's Up pin, James Franco. Remember the time you pushed my head down in a car towards your exposed penis and the other time you told my friend to come to your hotel when she was 17 after you had already been caught doing that to a different 17-year-old. Franco accused of all these things. Turns out five women, all former students of his acting school, came out to accuse him the day after, 2 days after the Golden Globes.
He did not attend the Critics' Choice Awards the day later. Did not attend the Thursday Choice. After Sunday.
And was on Colbert's late night show. And Colbert, to Colbert's credit,
and Seth Meyers, right,
ask him directly about these accusations.
What are your thoughts? Here's my take. I think it's weird that Franco has basically pushed the criticism behind himself and somehow landed on the high road, which I don't like. I mean, that's just my take on it. I know you think slightly differently on that because we don't know how we would handle PR.
What taking it different? What Mike?
Like if it was me, like I just got to finish this. If it was me, I'd be angry. I would defend myself.
That's
the
difference.
I don't know if I'd be right. And I probably would be wrong if I took a certain tact, but I would defend myself. And then again, like you said, on the supposition that I would have been innocent in that case and vice versa. Like I wonder what an innocent person would do. Now, I don't know what James Franco did. All I know is 35 and 17. It doesn't look good. 35 and 17, that age difference is definitely frowned upon by a lot of people. It's definitely something that's illegal in many states. Yes, in New York, 16 or 17 is the age of consent. Still, in 2014, when he's 35, he's 39 now, and he's with these 17-year-olds who are not celebrities, or it's not on an equal playing field, then you have all his students accusing him. These are people that he teaches on a daily basis. So that obviously there's a power dynamic there that's even worse than just being celebrity and whatever groupie, which is gross enough. But, you know, celebrity teacher and acting student, and he thinks he's given these people a leg up and a shot.
And they're trusting him with their careers and their money and...
And whether he whatever the lines of communication were, and we all know that with big movies, you hear it all the time, these nude scenes and these sex scenes have to be negotiated to a T when they're done right, or at least when they're, and even when that happens, you see, you know, many people coming out and being angry with them after the fact that they thought they were taken advantage of after the negotiations. Again, all of this stuff is understandable. And we have, in this case, these girls upset that the fact that they felt like they couldn't say no and they were pressured into doing it. And if he's had scenes that were in fact sprung upon them, orgy scenes involving oral sex.
Yeah, surprise orgy scenes was one of the quotes from
taking off their protection.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just, it sounds gross to me. And
it does.
I can't help but be judgmental about it because I think that's wrong. That's just my take. I can't help it. And for him to somehow reclaim the high road in his interview with Stephen Colbert and in his interview with Seth Meyers, where he's saying, I believe in their right to speak out so much that I'm not going to defend myself, essentially. I'm paraphrasing there. That just aggravates me, and it makes me suspicious. And again, we don't want to be the morality police here, but again, we have to give our opinion. We have to address it. We have to address it. So... To me, it sounds shady. It sounds like he's done wrong, and it sounds like this entire situation might be something to believe. I mean, we have bought a lot of these allegations from the jump, and I think, in my mind, I buy the allegations. I do.
Yeah, I do. I'm with you. I mean, it's gross. It sounds shady. I buy the allegations, and that's been kind of my stance and the show's stance here. You know, you have to believe these people. They're not... People aren't going to make this stuff up about, and if they finally do find the strength to come out, go public with these allegations, they need support, and it's only right to support them. At the same time, and I'm not about to make a defense of James Franco here, But in general, I don't know if you are an innocent person, and I am not saying James Franco is. Get that clear. Who knows?
Yeah, we don't know. We have no idea.
But if you are innocent and something does come out about you, I don't even know what a man, innocent or not, really, I don't know what a man accused of these things can even say at this point. Because, like you said, I mean, he tried to handle it calmly and take the high ground, and you think he comes out like an asshole. If he were to go fire and brimstone and be a fiery defense, I would think he'd look like an asshole myself.
Right.
So it's that part is subjective. How are you going to react to it? Because nobody knows. God willing, none of us will know because we'll never be in that circumstance to even have it confused.
Exactly. And to transition a little bit, what the Critics' Choice criticism of the Golden Globes, Men at the Podium, because yes, men spoke out during the red carpet. And maybe that was one of the reasons that the early portion of the show wasn't totally involving the Time's Up speeches before Oprah spoke, because they were saying a lot about it during the red carpet, men and women alike. Now, the Critics' Choice rightly said that the men on the podium didn't talk about it. Yes, Guillermo del Toro and Sam Rockwell.
And that deserved a bigger laugh, by the way. That skit with Niecy Nash and Olivia Munn toasting the nice guys in the room. Like, congratulations, you were just a man.
Yeah, you know? it was a little, I don't want to say nasty's the far wrong word for it, because that's one nasty woman. No, that's a bad way to say it.
Yeah,
but
sure.
It just, the tone was wrong. I'm going to land on the opposite side of you there, because I didn't laugh. I just thought it was a little awkward humor, and whenever you are angry in satire and in comedy, sometimes if you're too angry, the tone doesn't work.
It is easy, and I don't think it played in the room at all. I mean,
no, nobody laughed.
Yeah, there was dead silence in the. But then again, the Critics' Choice. If you watch the award show, it was mayhem in that room. Yes. And Kumail Nanjiani, when he was presenting an award, was funny. Refusing to speak until everyone sat down, because there was just so much
he
going
was funny
on
during his speech, man. I can't believe that. He did, you know, his life story is being rewarded. Is him and his wife's up there. How is he not a more emotional? He just totally diffused the emotion.
He's
and
so
he,
good
and he
at
made
everything.
Jokes one after another. It was great.
This is why The Big Sick needs more awards. I need to hear him speak more to rooms of celebrities.
Yes, you were a happy man in terms of that.
I was. And let's get into that's what we're here for, the award shows. We touched on, look, this stuff isn't going away, and it shouldn't go away. And hopefully, if you've done, you know, somebody had it. I think it was Alicia Lutz who hosts Fangirling on Nerdist, who said, you know, thoughts and prayers are how brave it is for every molester in that room to sit there amongst all that movement. It was a joke, it was tongue in cheek, because this is the movement that's happening in Hollywood. It's happening across the entertainment industry, and hopefully, it keeps happening. Weed these bad guys out, because that's what they are. We just got to hope it keeps up.
We'll be better for it at the end of the day, no question.
And support people that speak up and speak out. I think that's the main line for me anyway. Victims of these terrible atrocities deserve your recognition, deserve to be heard, and deserve your support.
Yes.
Hopefully we'll leave it at that for now. Let's talk about the actual awards from the award shows. We're going to begin with the first award, Best Supporting Actress. Mike's going to start us off and give you some tidbits about what happened with the two award shows for Best Supporting Actress.
The winner of both the Golden Globe and the Critics' Choice Award was Allison Janney for I, Tonya.
I told you so.
Yes, you did. The other noms in the Globes category was Metcalf for Lady Bird, Octavia Spencer, Shape of Water, Mary J. Blige for Mudbound, and Hong Chau for Downsizing. The nominees are in common with the Globes for the Choice, except for Tiffany Haddish getting the nod for Girls Trip and Holly Hunter getting the nod for the Big Sick. So those seven women involved in both categories. Analytics, 2016, all three went to Viola Davis. The same happened in 14, 12, 11, 10, and 9, 2009.
Something I noticed in the research for this is that the supporting categories for both men and female, they are very common to sweep. I mean, if one person usually sweeps the awards for you, it happens more often than not.
Patricia Arquette, Anne Hathaway, Octavia Spencer, Melissa Leo, Monique were all the, you know, sweepers.
Monique. Oscar award winner Monique.
Yeah, of the last 10 years. So all three awards agreed for 6 of the last 10. The Choice and Oscar agreed 8 of 10. The Globes and Oscar agreed 6 of 10. And the Choice and Globe agreed 7 out of 10. So a lot of that commonality in terms of my analytics would tell you that most likely Allison Janney is going to take the Oscar as well. We shall see.
Yeah, go rush to your bookie. It seems, after the award shows, you would think This one's Laurie Metcalf had all the momentum in the world, and I'll tell you what, when Janney's name was announced in the Golden Globes, not so much at the Critics' Choice, but the first time at the Golden Globes, my reaction was holy shit,
right?
Because I didn't see it coming. I didn't think they would do it. I'm glad they did.
The Choice and the Globe were different in 2007. Amy Ryan and Cate Blanchett. Other than that, the only other year. It was 2008. Over the last 10, the Choice and Globe agreed on Kate Winslet, and yet Penelope Cruz won the Oscar in 2008 again. So that was the only year where Laurie Metcalf seems to have a prayer in terms of the last 10.
Right,
on
as
that
far
projection.
As precedent goes, it would seem like Allison Janney's the leader in the clubhouse right now.
Right.
Just at least on statistics.
David Chen of SlashFilm.com had a fun tweet. Between last year's awards for People vs. OJ and this year's nomination / awards for I, Tonya, Hollywood's message is clear. You can make it big by playing people who objectively fail at making it big. Now, Gold Derby seems to say that Allison Janney is taking the lead as well. Allison Janney, they quoted her of saying that Lavanna Harding, the character she plays, mm-hmm. Tonya Harding's mom, Allison Janney said that she reminds me of Janet Reno on a bad hair day.
I thought this was maybe the funniest moment of the Critics' Choice, just out of awkward hilarity.
So I watched an ABC News interview with Tonya Harding and Lavanna Golden, Tonya Harding's mother. This was just aired over the last couple weeks. It was a fascinating interview. I would encourage everybody to watch it. And the interviewer asked Tonya Harding, your mom, does she get any credit? Because she worked all the jobs. They show Lavanna mentioning how she worked multiple jobs to pay for Tonya through her skating. And Tonya's like, yeah, she gets credit. When I'm being a bitch, I'm acting like my mom. So that...
Jeez.
Yeah, the knives were out. Tonya also said that she would have coffee and brandy at 4:30 and half the cup would be filled with coffee. When she was 11, she was aware of this. And the mother said she loved brandy flavoring. So I just want to finish with the fact that, in my opinion, I, Tonya, and this is kind of a follow-up on our Oscar Sprint profile that we did, it's like this weird story where you have conflicting POVs from Jeff Galluli, Tonya Harding's husband, played by Sebastian Stan, from Tonya Harding herself, played by Margot Robbie, and they also somehow work in Allison Janney's POV with the mockumentary style. They work in the actual interviews of the Sean Eckert character. They work in all these other people, the hard copy reporter who's commenting on the whole situation kind of more objectively than anyone else. And it's just fascinating that they mixed all these POVs, and it's almost like a mixture of the trash talk that's flying in both directions, and they break the fourth wall. So the more I study I, Tonya, I know I was going to say that this movie could drop points or really add points. I think it's staying where it is. I'm going to watch it again.
Yeah, I'm hoping it does.
Just in my brain, how it replays in my brain, I'm loving it. And the very last thing I want to say is I love the little birdie puppet
yes,
on Allison Janney's shoulder
the globe,
there.
Yes. I, Tonya, we said in our Oscar Sprint profile of it, Mike just alluded to, weird. One of the weirder movies. If you watch a bunch of movies, you're gonna you're gonna sit down and expect one thing, you're gonna get another. But it's especially now with Janney being the likely front runner for the Oscars, it's appointment viewing. You have to see it. As far as the real story between Tonya and her mother, like Mike just talked about, ABC just did a Truth and Lies documentary style with them. Today's the 12th. They did it last night, the 11th, which I have taped. I'm excited to watch that. Man, her mother's a trip. The real mother is a trip.
She still is too, my God.
Yeah.
Yes, you're going to do supporting actor, Mike.
Let's go there. Yeah, let's go to the supporting actor category next. We had Sam Rockwell beating out Willem Dafoe, Armie Hammer, Richard Jenkins, and Christopher Plummer, getting the Thanks for Not Being Kevin Spacey nom for the Gold Globes. Sam Rockwell took home the Globe. Sam Rockwell also took home the Critics' Choice Award for Best Supporting Actor. Wasn't at the show because he was hosting SNL this Saturday, which, again, we're going to be live-tweeting SNL. Anything in Hollywood that's happening,
we're going to try to live-tweet it.
We're going to try to live-tweet it until the Oscars.
Mix it up with us. We'll have some
at
fun.
@MMO_pod is our Twitter handle. You can follow us there. We try to mess around with everyone that talks to us, and we're doing a whole mess of stuff.
We're
both of us are
fun,
on there.
Yes.
We seem like a crazy account because Michael posts one thing, I'll disagree with it and comment on it. It looks like one account just arguing with itself.
Then again, people, you know, the big twist at the end of this whole podcast is that we're the same guy.
He was bred the whole time. Rockwell taking home the Critics' Choice Award again for supporting actor, beating out once more Dafoe, Hammer, Patrick Stewart for Logan, Jenkins, and the Call Me By Your Name Richard Stuhlbarg performance. So not the
Michael
Shape of
Stuhlbarg,
Water.
Yes.
Yeah, that's
yes.
what I meant. Michael Stuhlbarg, my apologies. Call Me By Your Name Michael Stuhlbarg performance, not the Shape of Water Stuhlbarg performance.
Yes,
and for supporting actor, this is where the Critics' Choice make their money. The awards have been around since 1995, and over its first 11 years of existence, they had the same winner who would go on to win the Academy Award for supporting actor only three separate times. Hmm. Those would be Voldemort in 1995 for The Usual Suspects, Chris Cooper in 2002 for Adaptation, Tim Robbins in 2003 for Mystic River. They have been more on fire the last 10 years, since 2007, not including this past win, obviously, with Rockwell. 2007, where Javier Bardem won the Critics' Choice and the Oscar. The Critics' Choice have picked the same winner as the Oscars on all but two occasions.
I didn't miss your Voldemort reference, by the way. That was terrific.
You like that? Yeah. Ralph Fiennes was in The Usual Suspects. Sly Stallone won it in 2015 for Rocky in his performance in Creed, over the eventual and controversial Oscar winner Mark Rylance for Bridge of Spies. And in 2012, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Lancaster Dodd's performance won it. Properly, I think we would say.
Look back at our 2012 episode.
Yeah, but he beat out Christoph Waltz for Django Unchained, a performance not even nominated by the Critics' Choice.
Probably because they thought it was a Best Actor performance, like it should have been.
I looked that up, and I would have thought so, no. But it wasn't nominated for the Critics' Choice. So yeah, I thought the same thing, though, if they maybe thought it was
weird.
A lead performance. Another nugget, in the last 10 years, every eventual Best Supporting Actor Oscar winner had previously won at least two of the Golden Globes, SAG Awards, Critics' Choice, or BAFTAs prior to claiming victory on Oscar Sunday, save, once again, for Rylance in 15-16, who had only the BAFTA win prior to winning the Oscar.
Huh.
So this sounds formulaic until you remember that, again, there is precedent for the eventual Oscar winner not even receiving a nomination in their category, as we just highlighted with Waltz in 2012.
Mm.
So Rockwell having won the Golden Globe, having won the Critics' Choice, you would think, again, along with Janie, obviously the leader in the clubhouse right now when it comes to Oscar Sunday.
The guilds are yet to weigh in. They typically show you a bit bigger cross-section of Academy voters. Obviously, the BAFTAs have a lot to say as well. A lot of the BAFTA Academy members are also members of the Hollywood Academy. So we'll see. I think Sam Rockwell's got a ton of momentum, though. That's for sure.
Yeah, and like we said, hosting SNL this Saturday, he's certainly one of the hot names in Hollywood. What was interesting to me is during his acceptance speech in the Golden Globe, and Screen Crush had this, and they tweeted out, this movie is about compassion, and I think we could use more of that these days. I don't think either of us would say, I mean, it's certainly not a theme that we saw hit on prior. A lot of the critics, as we said, go back and listen to our Three Billboards
podcast. We're very proud of that episode, yes.
They kept saying how this is a movie about anger, people reacting to anger, blah, blah, blah. And it's interesting to see one of the main characters of that movie saying, oh no, this is a movie about compassion. I don't know that we'd
see
it. The
most despicable character.
Right. I don't think we'd see it that way.
Is getting awarded. And yet, the most despicable character from a couple years ago, Idris Elba, was like looked past over. I mean,
he was during the Oscars So White controversy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So now this is really throwing us for a loop.
Mm-hmm.
That the fact that, you know, people seem to say, okay, Rockwell's a bit of a redeemed character, and they're okay with it. Even if he wasn't a redeemed character. Listen, if he wasn't a redeemed character, there's no way in hell they would vote for him. I don't care what his performance was like.
There was a backlash to the Rockwell character, 2-3 billboards in total, which I'm going to get to while you give us the best screenplay, because that's where it'll fit in.
The Golden Globe winner for Best Screenplay, and they combine adapted and original, was Martin McDonagh for 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. The nominations were Greta Gerwig for Lady Bird, Aaron Sorkin for Molly's Game, Guillermo del Toro and Vanessa Taylor for The Shape of Water, Liz Hanna and Josh Singer for The Post. Then Jordan Peele,
yeah baby,
wins the Critics' Choice for Best Original Screenplay. This is, again, only the originals. Guillermo del Toro and Vanessa Taylor, Shape of Water, Greta Gerwig, Lady Bird, Emily V. Gordon and Kumail Nanjiani, Big Sick, Liz Hanna and Josh Singer for The Post, Martin McDonagh for 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, the nominees.
That's no
that
small
one.
Feat, beating out McDonagh, del Toro, Greta Gerwig. I mean, that's a bloated category that Peele won there, as it was for McDonagh to win the Golden Globe.
I will mention the Best Adapted Screenplay category at the Critics' Choice Awards. I think it's going to be very similar, the Oscar noms, when it all shakes out. James Ivory won for Call Me By Your Name. Scott Neustadter and Michael H. Weber's The Disaster Artist, Dee Reese and Virgil Williams' Mudbound, Aaron Sorkin's Molly Game, And Jack Thorne, Stephen Conrad's, and Stephen Chbosky's Wonder, which was a very interesting script. Those are the other nominees for Best Adapted Screenplay. So, yes, Jordan Peele winning the Critics' Choice and Martin McDonagh winning the Golden Globe are the two big stories there. Everybody said this is a loaded category, and I think they're right. The analytics for the best original screenplay, and really for the screenplay categories in general, comparing Oscars to the Choice and the Globes, is not good. It's definitely,
no
like
correlation.
You said, like you said, best supporting actor. They're not making a lot of money into just in terms of, you know, those three in a vacuum. Only 4 out of the 10 years, all three agreed. The Globes picked an Oscar winner 7 out of the 10 years, but again, they're playing with two categories.
Yeah, two
the
shots.
Choice picked an Oscar winner all 10 out of 10 years, so they're doing better, obviously. But again, they've had two categories for the last few. They had one category going back a few years. It's really one of those analytical stats that can't tell you anything.
Yeah.
I mean, so yes.
The lesson, as always, nobody knows anything.
I think Jordan Peele is going to be a major contender. I also think Martin McDonagh, whether it's rightly or wrongly, is going to be up there for the nomination. We shall see. We got to see on the 23rd.
McDonagh was the story to me, like I said, in the supporting actor category. I saw some backlash to Three Billboards getting praised more so for the screenplay win than for Rockwell's supporting actor win. But there was, it was from a perspective that, again, I'm too integrated in, so I need, you know, it would take me to listen to another point of view to actually embrace it and understand what was going on. But people saying the movie was too white, too straight, even accusations of lazy writing. They accused McDonagh of using racial tropes to kind of, as a form of character building. Whether or not he did that is arguable, certainly, with the Rockwell character. I mean, there's no doubt that racism exists in this movie. I think it's used as more than a plot device, though. I mean, I would
argue the opposite. I would argue with you the opposite of what the media coverage has been, that it's for a point, and that just because you show ugly and bad things being done doesn't mean you're validating those things and you're glorifying those things. It's quite the opposite in my mind.
It's a weird year for that, because you deal with the Nazi and the people with torches and all that, you know, bullshit basically that still exists in America, and you're giving this hardcore racist the redemptive storyline of the movie and one of the biggest movies of the year. People have a problem with that. Maybe it's not the right time and place for that. These are all just criticisms that I've seen. A lot of people with blue check marks on Twitter had that, so
and
I
yet,
don't want to drop any names to
and
call
yet
them
there's
out.
Not a lot of Twitter coverage for when Jordan Peele wins that award.
Right.
I searched.
That's a great
like
point.
Crazy.
That's
it's
a great
not
point.
Shown at the Critics' Choice Awards broadcast.
That's a fantastic
and
point.
Then on Twitter, I'm like searching for some good nuggets and some really good coverage, and embarrassingly, and this is the truth here, embarrassingly, most of the media coverage on the blogosphere and on the entertainment websites have come from like black newspapers and black publications, you know, praising Jordan Peele, and yet he'll get a picture
and two
on,
white guys in
Gold
Connecticut
Derby.
Hosting a podcast.
Yeah, I mean, it's just very strange to me. Like,
yeah.
This
no,
is a
right.
horror
it's
comedy. This is a first time director and writer. Second time writer. This is just a comedian turned horror director. I can't believe he pulled this one off.
A sketch comedian turned Hitchcock.
Yet it's not a story at all.
Right.
That's my best original screenplay category. Mike, you're going to take the next one.
Yeah, let's go to the fourth award of this conversation for best lead actress. Are you ready to talk about more social issues?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Everybody knows by now the All the Money in the World story. We have to touch about it because Michelle Williams was a lead actress nominee for Best Picture Drama our lead actress drama nominee for the Golden Globe for her role in All the Money in the World. Obviously, the Christopher Plummer reshoot, they had to reshoot all the Kevin Spacey scenes. It's coming out now that Michelle Williams made something like $1,000 a day, whereas Mark Wahlberg got on the set for $1.5 million to do all those reshoots.
The Watch did a great recap of all this, Andy Greenwald and Chris Ryan on the Ringer Podcast Network. I can't believe I pitched that whole thing, but I did. And they basically said that Michelle Williams seemingly did the right thing right off the bat. She wanted the movie to get done, and she basically said, I'm going to do it and cooperate.
Yeah, the HuffPo had this too, where it seemed like Wahlberg was Wahlberg was holding the Trump card, and the story is that he said that he wouldn't approve Christopher Plummer being reshot unless he got his money. I'm of two minds about this. I mean, I don't begrudge Wahlberg for wanting his money.
His reps negotiated this thing, so I don't know how involved is Mark Wahlberg. Right. Obviously, he's been super successful.
If you have a problem with him, that's fine, but isn't this on the studio? I mean, you don't want the studio's not going to give away money, but you have to know how bad this is going to look.
Look, the studio could have easily said, "All right, we're going to give Michelle Williams exactly, her full scale
exactly,
too."
They
could have said that. Yeah, I mean, who are we demonizing here? Yeah. However, Mark Wahlberg showed up like 40 pounds difference in his weight, and it's very noticeable in the movie. Like, you see, you jacked up Mark Wahlberg, and then you'll see like skinny Mark Wahlberg. He still's got the stupid dumb look on his face. I'm not a fan of Mark Wahlberg playing CIA agent spies, by the way. Listen, Mark Wahlberg has his moments and he's a funny actor. I loved him in The Other Guys.
Hey, go.
He's hysterical.
How you doing, go?
When parodied on SNL, and he does a good job in a lot of movies that he's in. However, like, as a dramatic actor, I'm not a big fan, and I'm not a big fan of that performance. Michelle Williams is literally acting circles around him, and is much.
And that's the story that's come out of this. I saw Paul F. Tompkins on Twitter say it too. It's like somebody said, "Well, Mark Wahlberg's the one that puts butts in the seats." Are you
and
kidding
phones
me?
Phones it in, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. He's surrounded by Christopher Plummer and Michelle Williams. All right, let's not act like he's the headliner here, because if you put Christopher Plummer or Michelle Williams in the Mark Wahlberg role, I think it's going to be acted better.
I loved his character role too. I mean, I love the way they wrote the character.
I'm not shitting on Mark Wahlberg, by the way.
I thought he had more to work with, and he phoned it in. And in my opinion, I thought it was a very blank, dead-eyed performance, and I hated it.
So
I like Mark Wahlberg and other things. I didn't like him.
So again, I don't, for me at least, yeah, Mark Wahlberg probably could have done more, but I also don't think it's fair to put the entire blame on him. Does that make me an apologist for him? I'm sure that I can get that criticism. It's on the studio.
I don't think you're wrong. I don't think you're wrong.
Yeah,
I think
the studio needed to step up and say, yeah, we'll give you 1.5. We're also going to give Michelle 1.5, because you have to be aware of how bad that looks.
Record box office the world over. They can afford it.
You have to be aware of that. So anyway, Michelle Williams was nominated. Golden Globe Awards. Again, we're talking about Best Actress. Best Actress Musical Comedy went to Saoirse Ronan for her role in Get Out. That would have been a different movie. For her role in Lady Bird.
Big surprise.
She beat out Margot Robbie, Dame Judi Dench, Emma Stone for Battle of the Sexes, Helen Mirren for The Leisure Seeker. The Lead Actress Drama went to Frances McDormand. She beat out Jessica Chastain for Molly's Game, Sally Hawkins, Meryl Streep, and Michelle Williams, as we said. Talking about the Critics' Choice now, Margot Robbie won for Best Actress in a Comedy, beating out Saoirse Ronan, so that's kind of interesting. Those two have taken shots, but flipping one each other back
right
and forth. Tiffany Haddish, Zoe Kazan for The Big Sick, Emma Stone once again, and McDormand won again, receiving her award from Thor, even though she wasn't in person to receive it. She wasn't at the Critics' Choice Award, beating out Jessica Chastain, Sally Hawkins, Margot Robbie, Saoirse Ronan, and Meryl Streep. So the big story there is McDormand
winning both
in a category with both Robbie and Ronan,
yep,
as she was for the lead actress category in Critics' Choice, won it.
It's a fun category to analyze going forward. We're going to love it. There's major contenders, and it's a deep category. Everybody said Sally Hawkins has a chance going in, and the guilds may have something to say about that. Saoirse Ronan wins for Best Comedy or Musical over I, Tonya's Margot Robbie. I thought for sure, man, Robbie had that one sewn up.
Yeah, I did too. I was happy. I mean, I'm in love with both Margot Robbie and
you
Saoirse Ronan.
You really
so
love the Saoirse Ronan performance in the Lady Bird episode.
I was
the
surprised.
More I think about her performance in The Lady Bird, the more I can't get over what she accomplished.
But
I agree with
you.
You're winning me over.
As you said in our I, Tonya profile, did Margot Robbie win an award for that silent scene where she's just staring into
in
the camera?
Mirror.
Yeah, I mean, who knows?
She's so fantastic. Is she the Wolf of Wall Street, Leonardo DiCaprio performance of the year? I mean, I would put it almost on that level, even though I would put it on that level. I mean, she's also in that movie, but I think she's so versatile in I, Tonya, and I'm hoping that the guilds vote her in, and then we have a real race here and going into the Oscars.
It's certainly forming itself into a three-headed race.
Frances McDormand is spectacular,
she's
though we've said it from the beginning, and we wouldn't begrudge her a win if that's what happens.
It's Frances McDormand and and Saoirse Ronan that should feel good about themselves talk about the analytics for the lead actor category. It's a bit of a mixed bag as far as the Critics' Choice goes. Going back to 2008, the Critics' Choice has only selected the same winner of the Oscars 5 times, so basically they hit every other year. Mm. Though prior to last year, when Natalie Portman won the Critics' Choice Award for Jackie, and the Oscar went infamously to Emma Stone for La La Land, the Critics' Choice were on a streak of 3 consecutive years, pricking the same winner as the Oscars. But then again, those winners in those years were Brie Larson for Room, Julianne Moore in Still Alice, and Cate Blanchett in Blue Jasmine, who right. entered the Oscars Sunday as heavy, heavy favorites. Mm-hmm. So what does that tell us? You know, per usual, nothing. Globes are a different story when it comes to Oscars predictions. Every Globe show gives them a chance to crown 2, which we know. However, since 2008, one woman who has won a Best Lead Actress Golden Globe Award has gone on to win the Oscar every single year. So you would think, if that trend keeps up, Saoirse Ronan, Frances McDormand, the 2 Golden Globes lead actress winners, it's going to be one of them for the Oscars Sunday, at least the last decade has told us that.
And I will say, I like the structure of the Critics' Choice Awards in general. I like that they can give a best comedy to Big Sick, a best action movie to Wonder Woman. I like that they can give a best comedy actor to...
Well, it works in a year like this when there's so many diverse pictures that deserve recognition.
Right.
You know, like the Get Out and the Big Six and the I, Tonyas of the world deserve recognition. Wonder Woman deserves recognition for what it's done. In a year, you know, you take it a couple years back, you say if this happens in 2012 or 2016 or 15 either during the Oscars So White,
yep.
what are we giving awards to? Well, you know, it may not be worthy that
best
year.
Sci-fi movie, the Get Out, exactly. So, and yes, Franco's performance, or maybe we'll heretofore refer to it as the Tommy Wiseau performance, and the Margot Robbie performance also awarded on the night, which is fun. And then again, you can argue the opposite, that the fewer categories makes it more of a race,
more elite
on Oscar night. Yes. Maybe that's why it's the cream of the crop. So
let's go into some lead actor stuff Mike's going to talk about. Speaking of the Tommy Wiseau performance.
Yes, and the Golden Globes, again, they split it. Best actor in a leading role drama, Gary Oldman wins. Denzel Washington for Roma J. Israel Esquire, Timothy Chalamet for Call Me By Your Name, Daniel Day-Lewis for Phantom Thread, and Tom Hanks for The Post are the other 4 nominees in that one. The best actor in a leading role, comedy or musical, James Franco won for The Disaster Artist. Daniel Kaluuya was also nominated there for Get Out. Hugh Jackman for The Greatest Showman. Ansel Elgort, Baby Driver. Steve Carell, Battle of the Sexes. That's the Globes. Critics' Choice, the winner, just like the Globes. Gary Oldman for The Darkest Hour, or in the Best Actor Overall category. Timothy Chalamet, Daniel Day-Lewis, James Franco, and Jake Gyllenhaal finally getting a new name in there for his stronger performance. Hanks and Kaluuya, the other nominees in the Critics' Choice Overall category.
The stronger performance was one you and I both whiffed on. We thought sure he would be nominated for all these awards, and so far just the Critics' Choice, but we'll see what happens come Oscar time.
And like I said, James Franco wasn't there, but he won Best Actor in a Comedy at the Critics' Choice over Steve Carell, Chris Hemsworth for Thor Ragnarok, Kumail Nanjiani for The Big Sick, and Adam Sandler for The Meyerowitz Stories. I thought that was a worthy category of worthy nominees.
Yeah,
I liked how they did that. I do think comedies kind of need a special award at times. Gary Oldman, the big story, winning for both the Golden Globe and the Critics' Choice. Looking back at the last 10 years, you got some obvious heavy favorite winners, like you said, with the Best Actress category, the Daniel Day-Lewis for Lincoln and There Will Be Blood. You got the Jeff Bridges performance for Crazy Heart, the Colin Firth performance for The King's Speech. You have the Leonardo DiCaprio and the Casey Affleck performances the last 2 years for The Revenant and Manchester by the Sea, respectively. So all three, Choice, Oscar, and Globe, all three of those agreed 7 out of the last 10 years. And this may happen with Gary Oldman this year. The Choice and Oscar agreed 8 out of the last 10. The Globe and Oscar agreed 8 out of the last 10. The Choice and Globe agreed 8 out of the last 10. So any permutation you make, yeah, they have agreed these last 10 years.
Gary Oldman's got to feel good about himself.
70% of the time. So if you only listen to those numbers, 80, 70% likely that Gary Oldman wins. Do you make that bet in Vegas? We'll see.
It's going to be interesting to see. I mean, because Oscar voting just close, I think, a day before the Critics' Choice Awards. If not, then it's the day of, something like that.
We probably should know that.
We're not an Oscar spot. It's all right. We don't have a vote yet, so get on that, Academy. But
yes,
it's going to be interesting to see the backlash that this Franco story has. Because did people get their votes in too early? did this Franco story come out and people waited on their votes and they don't want to vote for him. They don't want to glorify him. There was a lot of backlash, a lot of hate for Gary Oldman, a lot of calls of hypocrite because of his checkered past with domestic violence.
Yep.
It's, you know, I hate talking about it. I hate talking negatively about these awards because these are great performances. But if these guys did shitty things, we have to, again, like we keep saying. So it's the fallout from all of this is going to be spectacular.
You're absolutely right. Last year they gave it to Casey Affleck, and that was shady. And now we have Gary Oldman up for one of the best performances of his career. However, I think we're going to talk about it. I don't think he's the slam dunk obvious favorite that's, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis has been in the past. And we haven't seen Phantom Thread yet. We're going to this week. And his acting in the trailer alone might be the best thing I've seen all year.
I'm so shocked he hasn't gotten more recognition.
I don't think he's going to have nothing to say about it at the end of the day. Will he get the guilds to actually propel him up or not? I don't know. Then again, it's all after the fact. The guilds voted a while back. They're going to kind of tell us more that they're going to tell each other what to do. So some tweets that were all about the James Franco.
Tommy Wiseau.
Whoa.
The stiff arm.
Stiff arm. Tommy Wiseau. That's the funniest moment of the night. Made a bunch of great GIFs on Twitter. And it's sad that...
It sucks that it was taken away. It's not the story.
No, it's not the story. Nor should it be.
It shouldn't be the story. Absolutely not.
If you want to go back and listen to our Disaster Artist Oscar Sprint profile, we got a lot of great stuff on the breakdown of that movie.
When it was a simpler time.
When it was simpler times.
About 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, James Franco's performance was terrific, even though we kind of had mixed reviews a little bit on it. However, the Tommy Wiseau information is priceless. You want to research him no matter what.
He's actually an alien.
Yeah, whether you listen to us about him or whether you... we could put it all in an hour for you. So.
Or you could just make stuff up off the top of your head and be just as accurate about this. Man, he's nuts. But yeah, you're right. That Heisman stiff arm that Franco gave Wiseau. Franco, I actually wrote a joke that's irrelevant now since what's happened, but I said that Franco might have just saved the rest of his career by keeping that microphone away from Wiseau, because you don't know what Tommy would have said with a live mic in front of, you know, after winning an award. But now, obviously, who knows what's to come of Franco's career after all these allegations.
So I'm going to keep going with Best Director, because you're going to start and finish.
Yeah, I'm just
going
to start yelling about this.
Yeah, Best Director winner at the Golden Globes was Guillermo del Toro for The Shape of Water. He won over Christopher Nolan for Dunkirk, Ridley Scott, All the Money in the World, Steven Spielberg for The Post, Martin McDonagh for Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. All the male nominees there. The Critics' Choice results, again, Guillermo del Toro won for The Shape of Water, Greta Gerwig for Lady Bird, Luca Guadagnino for Call Me By Your Name, both added to that list of usual suspects, McDonagh, Nolan, Peele, Spielberg for Three Billboards, Dunkirk, Get Out, and The Post. So, looking at the last 10 years, all three agreed, only 3 out of 10. So this is going to be more of a mishmash. We're not going to learn a whole lot from these two award shows. The Globe and Oscar agreed 4 out of 10. The Choice and Oscar agreed 6 out of 10. And the Globe and Choice agreed 6 out of 10. Again, Oprah's speech happens at the Globes. Natalie Portman drops the bomb. The biggest takeaway for me was Guillermo. I mean, all these guys are titans of the industry.
I felt so bad for
control freaks, right? They have ultimate control on their sets. These are men with long, illustrious careers, and they could not hold their faces strong.
Squirming.
After that line was dropped, Guillermo del Toro raises his eyebrows and looks like he wants to cry. Martin McDonagh, I can hear his inner monologue with his mouth shut. All the cuss words going through his pirate Irish head with what he's saying. Christopher Nolan just gulps. Ridley Scott tries to look tough in the beginning, and then his face, the most rigid face you'd ever see on an awards show red carpet, just drops. And Spielberg gives the saddest smile I've ever seen. Now,
tepid.
When we did our review of these nominees a month ago, Spielberg and Ridley Scott, these are huge names. We still said Greta Gerwig not nominated and Jordan Peele not nominated. We were very upset about Jordan Peele, but we hadn't seen All the Money in the World or The Post yet. Listen, they do not belong up there with Gerwig and Peele.
Yes,
I think the Oscars are going to change.
I hope so.
That and
right,
and hopefully
right the
change the winner too, because as much as we respect and like Guillermo del Toro as a person, as a fanboy turned, you know, awesome director, as much as I love him for the Pan's Labyrinth experience that I had while I was still a film student going to the festivals in New York and listening to the Q&As, and that was like a great time for me as a fan, never mind an aspiring person in the business. So Guillermo del Toro is awesome to listen to. He's awesome to biofilmography.
Made a lot of fat guy jokes about himself.
He made multiple fat guy jokes, which made me like him all the more. Yes, you are 100% right there. But is his movie the best of the year?
This is not the year to congratulate "these monsters have lived in my head." Right. You know, this is not the year for that.
This is not the year for a fairy tale.
Yeah, this is the year for a social statement.
Done differently.
And when you have something as... You could go with Gerwig or Jordan Peele, I think, in this circumstance. Objectively speaking, The Shape of Water is not as good as those two movies.
Not even close. And our grades say, I mean, I'm not going to say, but we go back and listen to those pods and wait for our Best Director pod coming up. But there's no way that I agree with you
it's
in that.
It's such now, a half measure. All the time.
Yeah.
It's not the year for a fucking half measure, Hollywood. Embrace something big.
The Shape of Water says nice things and correct things about
everybody's
gays, about
people.
Race,
we're all the same. Great.
Feminism,
beautiful.
But, yeah, it doesn't say any one thing particularly, you know, great. And the movie has major flaws in it, as we've talked about.
And questionable scenes that don't belong.
It's the driving Miss Daisy of the year. It already looks like it, and I'm very afraid.
And to do it in the year where you have two just. Get Out, especially. I mean, I think if we... I don't know. I don't want to speak for you, but I don't know how Jordan Peele doesn't win this award. I don't know how there's not more outrage about it.
Well, do they think they gave him enough for the sci-fi movie? Do they think they gave him enough for the best screenplay on the Critics' Choice aside? I mean, that has something to do with it. Everybody's filling out their ballots, and they can kind of shift things around to give people something, right? People that they admire something. Oscar, I don't know if they can do it that well because it's bigger and it's more focused. I just think, at the end of the day, award the best... performance. You I know Oscars are political. I know it's political,
but it doesn't even have to be political this time. Like, everybody loves Get Out and everybody loves Lady Bird.
I still say something else is gonna win best director or should win best director, because I just have it graded higher. That's my opinion. I think take the best performance by a director, like Damien Chazelle, undeniably great directorial performance, like Iñárritu's undeniably great directorial performance the last 2 years. You could see their hands shaping the composition. You could see all their innovative ideas just working to a T. And can you argue with a Gerwig or a Peele? Can you argue with a McDonough? Maybe more so. I don't think you can argue with Christopher Nolan. I don't think you can argue with those other names I mentioned. I can argue with this directorial performance by Guillermo del Toro, as much as I love him.
I gushed over Nolan when we did our Dunkirk movie, too. I mean, what he did with no dialogue. You have a year with such standout performances, and you're giving it to the guy. You're congratulating the kid that grew up with monsters. That's great.
Yeah, the guy that successfully navigated the middle ground for your Oscar voting palette.
This isn't the year for that. And you have the revolutionary films that are universally beloved. Everybody loved Dunkirk for the most part for what it was.
Yes.
You made a great point last night, though, about... You want to talk
Saving
about
Private
Ryan.
Ryan didn't get it either.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Hollywood doesn't love the war movies. Everybody loved Lady Bird. I don't know why, in a year that's so a feministic movement and so going for the gusto, time's up, you have all these strong female characters. I don't know why Greta Gerwig would be overlooked as she is. A year with all the radical change and the surge for minorities and the racial issues that are perverse throughout the land. I don't know why Jordan Peele isn't being talked about more.
Right.
You have all three huge choices that are beloved pretty much around the world, and you're not giving it to any of them.
Those three seem like obvious contenders. Now, full disclosure, we're going to keep watching these movies. We're going to nitpick, and we're going to debate this category more so going forward. I don't know if my mind will change, but I would say that the three best directed movies of the year are Gerwig, Peele, and Nolan's Dunkirk.
Was Tanya better directed than Shape of Water? I mean, was Shape of Water that much better than I
thought? You wonder how much of a hand the screenplay had in that. I think the screenplay yeah, was I'm with so you. wackadoo and great that I loved Stephen Rogers' screenplay. And then, which is also not getting
was the Florida identified. Project better? I mean, like, we're talking about
things dollar for dollar, we got things to say yeah. about the Florida Project.
We're there. Talking about other movies that aren't even being recognized for Best Director that could make a case that they were better than
Spielberg and Ridley Scott. Really, it's the name thing. Yeah, it's the fact that they have been nice yeah. with access to the Hollywood Foreign Press for 30 years. It's just nonsense. And I don't see it. I don't see it at all.
Go watch Shape of Water. Go listen to our Shape of Water podcast, and then come back and tell us where we're wrong.
We'll have a post pod coming out. We'll have a The Post review pod. As an Oscar Sprint profile coming up probably next week,
yeah.
and we may or may not do All the Money in the World. We're kind of and it's in we'll our see. Back yeah. pocket
I'm
right
sure
now.
Sure, we would have to, but it's losing momentum. Probably rightfully should.
If so. Plummer gets nominated, we'll do it. That'll probably be one of the holdovers, yeah. the carryovers we have after the nominees come out.
So let's talk about Best Picture. It's the final award on the night. Golden Globes, Barbra Streisand presented Three Billboards for Best Picture Drama over Dunkirk, The Post, The Shape of Water, and Call Me by Your Name. I thought Get Out had a chance for Best Picture Comedy, especially when they were going over the nominations. The room kind of exploded when Get Out was announced in yeah. the Golden Globes. It was Lady Bird that won over Get Out, Disaster Artist, Greatest Showman, and I, Tonya. Critics' Choice, Sir Patrick Stewart presented the Best Picture to Shape of Water over Big Sick, Call Me By Your Name, Darkest Hour, Dunkirk, Florida Project, Get Out, Lady Bird, The Post, and Three Billboards.
Now, they did say Best Action Movie, Best sci-fi movie, best comedy at the Critics' Choice. Big Sick took comedy. Best action movie was Wonder Woman. Best sci-fi was Get Out. So they did give other movies a little more best of
shine, play, yeah. Which, right? which, like you said, for the war, a year like this, it's very nice to
so
see.
So the Critics' Choice, I get it a little more. I get the choice a little more. For the Golden Globes, you have Lady Bird winning the best comedy, which makes some sense. All right, fine. Shape of Water winning over serious categories. I don't understand.
It just makes me. I just want to scream. It's such a middle of the road, which has been our theme throughout this fucking podcast. You can't do half measures anymore. You've done it for 40, 50 years. Stop doing it. Make a statement. And there's no easier year to make a statement than this is a layup. You can yep. pick any of two or three different movies for Best Picture and be fine.
We got a lot of good stuff coming after the award season, but one of the main things we're going to do, one of the standbys that we think will be listenable going forward for years, is our retrospectives on Oscar races past, on Oscar categories past. We love doing it. We have a blast. And yes, when we do one of those retrospectives, we see all this voting body nonsense time and again. We see the politics get askewed, or the politics conflict with multiple movies, and people vote for different reasons, and sometimes they vote for this middle of the road candidate.
One of the things we always do in those retrospectives is a year in review. And if yes. you look back at 2017 on Wikipedia,
oh my God,
you're going to see all these social movements. You're going to see the backdrop of change and momentum, and the underclass uprising, and the vehicle of change set in motion. And then you're going to reward The Shape of Water for Best Picture?
Look, when we do a Mike, and Oscar 30 years from now, when we look like the Muppet Show guys and from the balcony, we're going to mention
I'm just all happy
of that.
To be anywhere.
In 2017's year in review, my God.
Let's go some Best Picture stats. Critics' Choice Award began in 1995, and as far as Best Picture, it didn't have the same Best Picture winner as the Oscar winner in the category until 1999. Where American Beauty won it. However, since 1999, when both the Critics' Choice and Oscars went to American Beauty for Best Picture, in the 18 years, including that one, the Critics' Choice Best Picture winner has also been the Oscars Best Picture winner 13 times. High percentage. Only times that they got it wrong, 2004, Critics' Choice gave it to Sideways, Oscars went Million Dollar Baby, 2005, Critics' Choice Brokeback Mountain, Oscars Crash, 2010, Critics' Choice Social Network should have won over Oscars King's Speech, 2014, Critics' Choice went to Boyhood, Oscars went to Birdman in a bit of an upset, and 2016, Critics' Choice went to La La Land, Oscars went to Moonlight, unless, of course, you ask Faye Dunaway, because then it went to La La Land. There have only been a handful of times the Critics' Choice winner for Best Picture was not also a Golden Globes Best Picture winner for either comedy, musical, or drama section. Those times would be 96 Golden Globes' The English Patient, which went on to win the Best Picture for Oscars, Evita for comedy musical. Critics' Choice went Fargo. 97 Golden Globes drama with Titanic went on to win the Oscar. As Good as It Gets for comedy musical. Critics' Choice picked L.A. Confidential. In the four times since where the Golden Globes, either Golden Globes winners, was not a Critics' Choice winner, it was the Critics' Choice pick that went on to win the Oscar. 2006, Babel won drama, Dreamgirls comedy musical for the Globes. The Departed won the Critics' Choice Best Picture. The Departed won the Oscar. 27, Atonement wins the drama. Sweeney Todd wins comedy musical at the Globes. No Country for Old Men wins the Critics' Choice Best Picture, wins the Oscar. 2010, Avatar wins drama. Hangover comedy musical. Hangover won Best Picture in 2010 at the Golden Globes. Critics' Choice, The Hurt Locker won Best Picture. Hurt Locker wins the Oscar. 2015, Revenant wins drama. The Martian for comedy musical at the Globes. Ugh. Spotlight wins Best Picture. The Critics' Choice, Spotlight wins the Oscar. So when the Critics' Choice and Oscars, or Critics' Choice and Golden Globes differ, it's the Critics' Choice that usually wins the Oscar. Please don't have that happen this year. I don't want my Twitter to explode. I don't want to hurt my laptop, but I will. Dancing, oh, I will.
Dancing with Mermen.
Yeah, please don't do that.
Listen to our podcast.
It's not that. It's a good movie. It's fine.
It's fine.
It is a fine movie.
Fine. B plus, yes. Probably all day, just because of the merits of the technique involved. And yeah, I think we really flush it out in that former podcast that I keep trying to pitch. But I can't see myself. I'm going to rewatch the darn thing a bunch more times.
Look, we don't want to get into the projection business in this podcast. We said we weren't going to, but...
but we will.
It's not worthy of a Best Picture. It's not. I don't want to sound like I'm hating on it, but I'm not. It's a fine movie, but this is a year where there have been great movies.
Yes.
Done by phenomenal people that otherwise have yet to have a voice or the stage to produce these great movies. You can make a statement without being radical and without upsetting too many people. Because it's become, for as awful as the world has been, it has become accepting of so many of these movements, which is a great thing. And so many of these social movements, it's laid out for you. Literally, all you have to do is not fuck it up.
I just wonder if a lot of people are torn by the issue movies, and maybe a lot of votes are going towards Get Out, and then you get a split with Lady Bird.
We've seen it in the past.
Maybe Dunkirk's just totally out of it now, and then Shape of Water kind of says a lot of nice things about a lot of nice causes, and it gets the vote. I don't think Shape of Water is head and shoulders above those other movies. You just can't convince me of that, so it doesn't make a ton of sense at this time. But like you said, there is variance. There is variance from these award shows moving forward. SAG and the guilds will give us more of an idea. And yes, we're going to watch these movies time and again. So maybe Shape of Water wins us over a little more as we get closer. Maybe that pluses points. I'm going to keep an open mind about it, I think.
I'm going to try to. It's just we both said after the last night, after the Critics' Choice Awards, we're pissed off.
Yes.
I mean, we agree. That made us angry that Shape of Water got that recognition. So we're going to see, and Mike's right, maybe it gains traction with us over time. We still have 2 months to go. We got a couple weeks before the Oscars nominations are announced. We're going to see what happens, and we're going to be with you guys up until that point. We're going to be reviewing when the Oscar nominations are announced. We're going to do those categories and single shot episodes. Until then, we're going to keep churning out these Oscar sprint profiles for all the major movies.
Major contenders for the Oscars, and we're having a blast doing it. We're getting a lot of play. We kind of took a step up this week. We're very proud of
it. Yeah, listen, anybody that clicked on it, if you're new listeners, you just heard us for the first time, we really appreciate it. We hope we give you enough to have you stick around, tell your friends, and we're going to keep churning these out for you, and hopefully we're going to find, you know, something that can be considered a decent episode at one of these points.
We're live tweeting. We're recording on multiple times a week. Mike is recording on his birthday. So happy birthday again to you, Mike.
Yes,
have a great night and celebrate it with your family and friends. And also make sure you edit this on time. And how dare you put this one out late. You jerk.
I would never. Anything you're looking forward to with the Oscars without getting into predictions coming up?
The BAFTA nominations were interesting.
Yes.
The SAG Awards are coming up. I'm excited for the post Phantom Thread and the Darkest Hour Oscar sprint profiles we're going to do over the next, you know, week and a half, 2 weeks. I'm interested to see if the Big Sick, Mudbound, and All the Money in the World are the other three that we wind up doing at the end of January, because those are the likeliest to find their way into Oscars.
To fill in the
nomination
noms, yep.
You know, Or if we get something just out of left field, are we going to do a girls trip pod? That would be a fun one.
I hope so. I hope
Tiffany
so.
Haddish
I really
gets
do.
The nod. Are we going to do a big sick pod that like we mentioned in our very first episode? And Mike loves it.
We did our first episode. That was the leader in the clubhouse for me. And I, as awards nominations came out, I was kind of surprised with the lack of attention. It's getting, Holly Hunter's getting, just not there.
We may squeeze a Black Panther movie event pod in the middle of January. We may squeeze some weird ones in, like an Oscar pool. We were talking about that Oscar pool pod,
yes,
where we kind of can, handicap and really dive into the projections, look at Vegas, what they're saying.
Or maybe we'll just go totally off the reservation and review Strange Brew and force you guys to listen to it. The Rick Moranis movie.
So we're going to be an around the year movie podcast. We still have things to say after that, like that go in towards the retrospectives, like we mentioned, that go towards a movie event whenever those occur, and with the blockbusters, with the summer movies, and they're happening year round now. It's not just constituted towards the summer. So yeah, keep listening to us and keep following and subscribing, and we're having a blast.
We love hearing from you guys. We love interacting with you guys. You want to reach out to us? We're Mike, Mike, and Oscar on Facebook. Mike, and Oscar.
Oscar?
Yes, Oster. With a T, right? Capital. Mike, and Oscar on Instagram, MMO_pod on Twitter, where we live tweet all the Hollywood events, including this Saturday's SNL performance posted by Sam Rockwell. We are, what did I miss? MikeMikeAndOscar@gmail.com is our email. You can reach out to us that way.
We're email people, no question.
We've had a lot of interaction. We really appreciate everyone that's liked, commented, subscribed, given us a retweet. We love it, guys. We love interacting with you.
I'll leave you with this question, Mike. What's the best trophy of the three? Is it the globe? Is it the Oscar, the little man? Or is it that cool crystal thing that is the Critics' Choice Award with the star at the top?
Well, considering I pitched to you that I want to make a human 6-foot-tall Oscar costume with myself.
Sticking with the man.
Yeah,
the
I'll go with the man, the third member of our team here, the Oscar.
Yeah, it sounds good to me, too.
So we'll see you guys soon. We appreciate it. Stick with us and send me gifts. It's my birthday.
Happy birthday.
Later, guys. We'll see you next time.